So there you have it. I mean, I feel like I've been sick since the beginning of 2018. I'm really starting to feel like somebody put roots on me. And I mean, these got to be some powerful roots, because I don't even subscribe to roots. So whatever I did, whichever of y'all is killing chickens and tossing cowrie shells about, you know, and burning those long, thin candles, you know, and putting coconut and almonds on shrines in my name, whatever, I think you could better use those skills. I mean, there are Koch brothers and Trump administration cabinet members out there. That's one thing that has always confused me. And I'm not just going to talk about the roots people, but all of you, you know, black vengeance seekers. You know, I had so many people tell me, brother, if you diss the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, I'm going to come for you. Brother, if you diss Dr. Malachi Z. York, I'm going to come for you. Like, I'm not. What about the warden or the CEO or the janitor at the prison where they put locked the people up? You know, the FBI not only had a file on the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad detailing his most intimate business. They went and told his wife about his indiscretions in hopes that she would leave him and then cause a rift within the nation. So shouldn't you be going after the J. Edgar Hoover, the FBI, the J. Edgar Hoover headquarters building, wherever that is, CIA? And that's, I mean, it's just priorities. I mean, I could just see some of these goons sitting down like, okay, let me write down my priority list, my hit list. First, I'm going to get these dudes talking smack on the internet, the greatest threat to my movement. And then the prime ministers, presidents, global security apparatus, aircraft carriers. But first, top of the list, internet talkers. I don't know. But sometimes I feel like I provoke people who dabble in the dark arts, and they put them roots on me. And I don't understand how I got so high on the priority list. And that's why I don't even believe in that stuff, because I think if y'all really had those magical powers, first of all, I think the first thing y'all would do was the numbers, the lottery, something like that. Y'all go to Las Vegas or Atlantic City. That's how I know it's fake. Because I know that's the first thing I would do if I had magic. Anyway. And I also think it might be roots. This isn't totally unfounded, because I had intended to come in here last week. Instead of being laid up sick as a dog, I had intended to come in here last week and tell all the Black Panther business. If you know my wife, you know she'll tell you, I don't care about spoilers. I don't care about hearing spoilers. I don't care about sharing spoilers. It doesn't matter. That type of stuff don't matter to me. That's Willie D. That don't matter to me. Because I just don't, it's not that important, so I don't care. So I'll spoil, I'll snitch. And so, but fortunately for everyone that listens to the Bro Diallo show, I'm not really up on what's what, who, what, when, where, why, how. I don't know what's going on. So it's difficult for me to spoil movies, because I'm typically the last person to see anything that comes out. Because I'm very patient and very cheap and very poor. So I don't run to the theaters. I don't get advanced copies. I don't go to premieres and all that stuff. I don't know it. So it's not that I don't want to spoil. It's just I'm not in a position to spoil stuff because I don't know. The new Game of Thrones, I don't know what's going to happen in Game of Thrones. I'm not going to see Game of Thrones for another several months. You know, the new movies out there, I don't know. I wait till they come out on Netflix or pop up on network television. I be watching the blockbuster movies with commercials. You know, for dental cream and hemorrhoid creams in between the big movies. I'm always the last. Look at this. Didn't I tell y'all roots? Didn't I tell y'all? Didn't I tell you? Instead of microphone and fell off. I told y'all it's roots out here, and y'all think I'm playing. Everything has been going wrong for Bro Diallo. Anyway, I got to hold the mic like a rapper. Hold on. The microphone thing came off the thing. Maybe I'll just move to another mic, but I'm too stubborn for that. This is some bull. Can I tell y'all? Here we go. Lord have his mercy. All right. I'm going to have some counter roots now. Give me 1 second. Oh, man. Oh, wait. Now this isn't queued up. Give me 1 second while I fix the mic, because, like I said, y'all think I be playing when I say these roots.
My name is D-Nice, and I'm about to drop some funky lyrics on this track I made up, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, and you don't stop. Yo, my name is D-Nice, although I hate to admit it. Taking out your suckers and you don't know how I did it. See, every episode remains in this mood. Very cool, very calm, there's no sweat in my palm. I just pick up the mic, proceed with a song. I get right to the point, my composition's not long or short. It's like a sport, hanging in the middle. But now if you're puzzled, let me kick the whole riddle. That my name is Derek, and if I didn't mention D-Nice, it's just a description. It describes the kid on the mic. I'm the TR-808, huh, but just call me D-Nice.
Shut up, D-Nice. Shut your ass up. I'm back, and I'm mad as hell. But like I said, didn't I tell y'all there's roots on me? But it's good. I know some counter roots, people. I don't know if they'll do it for me, do the counter roots, because I've mocked and belittled their powers. But I don't know. I'm going to have some counter roots. Go to the local, what do they call that thing? Botanica. I'm going to go to the local Botanica. And I don't know if it's Yoruba, Khan, Vodun. I don't know. Santeria. I don't know what kind of roots, but I know it's roots on me, but it's good. Maybe white Jesus. Nah, white Jesus. He comes with boils. I ain't had no Jesus or Muhammad type roots. That's some real obscene, you know, they like to get sexual. They like to mess with your genitals, give you boils and cysts and kill your firstborn child. I don't think, you know, African deities will just give you the sniffles and mess with your microphone. But you don't want to run afoul of these death cult, murder cult, white gods, man. Oh my goodness. Now, I ain't got them kind of roots. I ain't brought that kind of heat down on myself yet. Then I know I done messed up. Anyway, where was I? Spoilers. I don't care about spoilers. I had every intention to come in here and give my position, because for the first time in decades, I had the up and up. I had an opportunity, thanks to a local politician, a local bureaucrat. I had an opportunity to see the Black Panther movie before it even was made for popular release. So I had some inside track. And I was going to come tell it. I was going to go come talk about it. And I had said some things online. And people were like, oh, spoilers. And I'm like, oh, don't care. You go to hell and get a life on the way. You know? But that's me. But then I'm laid up. I'm sick as a dog. I couldn't do nothing. So that's roots. Y'all, roots protect the movie, not to protect our water. Flint water can go. But y'all put out roots to protect the plot from some pretty running line. Now, today is the only day I wanted to talk about the movie and the deep-seated symbology of the movie and the psychology behind the movie. I wanted to talk about that on a Friday where I had the extended show. But I promise you, today is it. E.T. it. As far as far as the movie goes. I'm done after today. Meaning I'm not going to bring it up. I don't want to talk about it. I don't care about it. And don't want to hear about it. So today is our last day for Black Panther, for me. I'm sick of it. Now, if you want to participate, let me click on the phone thing. But that's probably going to be, that's rooted up too. And if you call in the Bro Diallo show, you might walk away with roots on you. Who knows? I don't know how it works. So call in at your own risk. You know, go get your dead chicken or whatever y'all, the mess y'all do. But here's a few things that stand out. I can't say all the crap that I got in my notes about the movie. But this is it. I was supposed to talk about it last week. I don't want to be talking about it today. But, I mean, I can't. I'm a man of the people, and the people have spoken. Almost $1 billion dropped on this movie. This is the most popular film on planet Earth. It's trending in China. It's trending in Brazil. In Brazil right now, Black Panther's got black folks doing sit-ins. They call them Afro-Brazilians, Afro-Latinos. And like a scholar said, you can't have Afro-Latinos unless you got Euro-Latinos. So if ain't nobody saying Afro-Latinos, I'm not saying Euro-Latinos. But if y'all want to play Euro-Latinos, then we can play Afro-Latinos. But black Africans in Brazil are staging massive sit-ins, apparently. And they're saying that they are inspired by and motivated by the Black Panther movie. It's even given black pride in the African continent. So this is the most popular film on planet Earth and one of the highest grossing films in history. It's just, it's still on its incline, and it's already at $700 million in global ticket sales. And there's a few things I want to say about this cultural phenomenon. And I'm not sure where I should start, because like I said, I wanted to talk about this on an extended show, and I'm not going to have much time, so I'm going to have to condense what I have to say, and I'm through with it after today. I'm done. I'm not talking about it anymore. I'm through with it before y'all know what to do with it. One thing I want to say, since I brought up the $700 million and counting in sales, what really frustrates me, even some colored people that I respect, some black people whose opinions and insights and intellect that I go to help shore up my own positions and understanding, are saying something that really annoys, frustrates me, and hell, it pisses me off. They would say something so silly. And some of y'all have said this about the Black Panther movie. And what that thing is when y'all talking about, we spent all this money on the Black Panther movie. We spent $700 million. Imagine if we put that money in the community. Imagine if we put that money into a business. Imagine if, like, first of all, do you know how economic work? It's really silly. I'm not going to say stupid because, like I said, some people I respect are making these assertions. So I'm not going to say it's really stupid. I'm just going to say it's really silly. For us to sit here and look at the money trickle in, these little ticket sales, and think that that is any potential for any type of economic development, that those funds can be in any way tapped or mobilized for anything besides entertainment or some minor fashion, the minor purchase. Now, when you look at economic power around the globe, whether you want to look at capitalist economic wealth, U.S. or national wealth of the United States, of China, of Arab or Saudi oligarchs, you know, you look at whether it's a familial dynasty, the Oppenheimer, the Bilderbergs, you know, organizational wealth, trilaterals, the, what they call it, Council on Foreign Relations, the Gates Foundation. When you look at all these pockets of economic wealth, power, and influence, How many of them have been amassed and constructed based on thousands upon millions of fractured individuals, and fractured, I mean broken apart, separate, pulling their nickels and dimes together? Did white people build wealth because white people as a collective decided, instead of going out to NASCAR, we'll take our NASCAR ticket money and throw it in a pot? Is that how white wealth was built? Did in China, was the China wealth built by all the Chinese people getting in a huddle and saying, this year, instead of going to the casino, this year, instead of going to see the latest Hong Kong blockbuster, we'll take, instead of, we'll just sit at home and take that little $5, $10, $6, $3, $4, $5, however much a movie ticket in Asia is, and we're going to throw that in a pot, and we're going to use that pot of ticket money, of leisure money, of personal entertainment funds, and pull it all together and create a global manufacturing powerhouse. We're going to build the world's greatest creditor nation off of ticket money. That's not how economic power is constructed. But I guess, y'all, it's just stupid to say that. There is no center of economic power anywhere in the world. Personal wealth, national wealth, corporate wealth, institutional wealth, anywhere in the world that was built in such a manner. And I know y'all really want to put, now, number one, y'all first, the attitude is, look at black people, they ain't got it together. And one minute y'all say we ain't nothing. Black people ain't got it together. We're so very untogether as a people. And then you expect us to do things that have never been done, have never even been attempted or suggested by any other group. And the basic laws of economics, I would think, is don't reinvent the wheel. If you want what somebody got, more likely than not, you should do something akin to what that person got did. So the fractionalized, separate, individualized, personalized, individual ticket budget, personal family entertainment budget of the black community is not a viable source for collective wealth or empowerment or to build an economic foundation. That's just a waste of time and energy. It's not. And before you can pull somebody's movie ticket money together, you'd have to have some level of ideological unity, some level of a vision, a collectively held vision and outlook and goals that not only spans across geography, but spans across generations and spans across religious, ethno, and cultural lines. We got none of that. So what the hell? Why even say that? It just sounds stupid. We didn't spend. Imagine if we put. Don't imagine anything. That $700 million is not. It's like. And I don't want to be crass. But. There's energy in feces. Because feces. You know. Whether it's cow dung or human feces. There's an untapped energy source there. Because of the metabolic reactions, the bacteria metabolizing the solid waste matter and giving off gas. Methane is one of the gases. Sulfur and other energy and the heat produced, the reproductive metabolic processes in human waste, there's energy there. But are you going to run around and gather it up and bring it to your house and figure out some kind of way to do it? No. Why? Because the potential contamination, the sickness that could come is outweighs the potential benefits from doing that. Even though in some countries they do have these bricks made of cow dung that are very high in carbon that people burn. But if you're going to use, when you think about energy or power, you have to consider the source of that power. And when you utilize that source of that power, whether it's coal and it's going to give you global warming, whether it's human and animal waste, whether it's going to expose you to pathogens, or whether it's solar, wind, which requires some front-end investments and inputs in order to tap into that renewable energy, you always have to consider the how you get it, how you maintain it. And so what people generally do is they go for what's called economically the low-hanging fruit. What is the power that's easiest to access, has the least amount of risk associated, and gives me the highest output? Because if I have to expend more energy to gain than I would gain from securing this energy source, then it's not worth it. Then I'm going to be operating with the deficit. And maybe I shouldn't have went the feces route, but I'm trying to drive home a point about, you know, you want to run up, go door to door and ask black folks for their little ticket money to build a global black economic base. That will require for every dollar that you get from all these fractionalized, individualized, personalized black folks, for every dollar that you get, you're probably going to have to expend $15. Because you got to go out here and convince all these individual black people who are all marching off to see Black Panther. Like, whoa, can I have a moment of your time? You're going off to get a Black Panther ticket and buy a Black Panther action figure and get a Black Panther mask for your child. You're on your way to the barbershop to shave your head. Then you go to the tattoo shop to tattoo your head to look like the Dora Milaje. You know, you on your way to the African shop to get you a spear. Before you invest all this money in your personal entertainment, in your personal ego salve, can I perhaps convince you to take a portion of that money and put it into something else and do something else with it? Now, that takes time and energy and a lot of argument, and you're going to get turned down and debate. Excuse me. So it's just an inefficient, impractical way of amassing wealth for the collective interest. Just doesn't make sense. And I can keep telling you, I'm not going to name any names, but a lot of y'all that I respect are out here like, we could do something. That $700 million and climbing money that's going into the coffers of Disney Inc. is not money that's accessible to us. It's not even money that is relevant. Now, Disney just gave $1 million to some Oakland performing arts school. They made a donation. Right? Which is crumbs compared to the $100 million that the NFL is going to kick out. But guess what? Even in the money that's being committed by Disney Inc., it's not going to, they are not going to fund land redistribution in Zimbabwe and South Africa. They're not going to fund black identity extremists. They're not going to create a counter or competitive institution to their own power. So even if Disney committed the funds to the community, it's going to be allocated in such a way that sustains the status quo, which is capitalist, which is white, which is patriarchal, which is militarist, which is imperialist, and all these other things we don't like. They're not going to fund you to subvert those things. So even when the money trickles down, when the white power structure unzips its fly and trickle down some resources to the wretched of the earth, you can understand that those funds are directed, and those funds come with requirements. I ain't saying don't take the funds. I'm saying don't misinterpret the purpose and the ultimate what can actually be accomplished with those funds. So I say to you, especially you black people whom I respect, shut up about that $700 million. And when it hits $1 billion, when it breaks box office records worldwide, and then when the DVD comes out, it breaks DVD sales records worldwide, and then when the Christmas season comes, and before Christmas is Halloween, and then Black Panther costumes break sales records, Halloween sales records. And then when Christmas comes, and then the inevitable Black Panther cartoon, and the inevitable Black Panther video game, and the inevitable Black Panther action figures, and the commemorative Black Panther martini set. And when blanket saturation and merchandising comes down, just lay back, black folks, and let it go. Just let it happen. Do not try to pipe into that feces pipeline. Don't pipe into it. It's just, it's a losing strategy. Let that currency flow. That's not anything in terms, like, you can, now, when I say let it flow, like, if you're the neighborhood bootleg man, you can get some knockoff toys, or if you're enterprising and you know the hot Black Panther toy item for Christmas and you run to the internet or you run to the local toy store and buy it all up and flip it for extra dollars, it's all good. But in terms of black people dispersed all over the world, digging in their pockets and instead of and being able to divert the money, and it's just getting started. In terms of black people diverting those funds from Panthermania into anything that is subversive, counter to, or even radical as a countermeasure to the white power structure, the systems and institutions of global white domination, that ain't where it's going to come from. And if you want to be a member of a race, or you want our race to be capable of saying, I'm going to pay a revolutionary tax. For every dollar I spend on personal entertainment, I'm going to spend a quarter on black empowerment. If you want us there, if you want black people to start to divest from the multimedia global corporate conglomerate entertainment system, to deliberately and consciously begin to divest funds and energy and attention from that and redirect that towards something revolutionary, then there's a whole lot of work you got to do on our community on a cultural level, on a fundamental self-identity level. And that work ain't been done. It hasn't been done by the people. And on top of that, let's say today, let's say right now, black folks say, you know what? There's some, have an epiphany. There's a mass epiphany, which doesn't happen, which has never happened. It's not going to happen. And black folks says, you know, we're going to divest from this. We're going to stop enriching the black elites, because since slavery, since the first black man got his meritorious manumission and bought another black man as a slave and bought his own plantation, and we had the very first black elite on U.S. soil, black people with means and resources and exceptional talents have always gone along with the status quo. They have never, ever been any real evidence that black elites have been willing to surrender their personal, individual status for the collective good. Never any evidence. So the black people say, hey, we're done trying to campaign for black celebs, black millionaires, black elites to try to get further entrenched in the white system so that they could further enjoy all the spoils of being at the helm of the empire. Private jets and money phones and diamonds and gold and all this status. The black people don't use it for, they get to that level, don't help us, so we're done kicking in. Let's say that happened. Let's say black folks say, look, I had for the month of February, Black History Month, I had $45 set aside for my family's entertainment. And we had planned to get some tickets, and I had planned on turning up, getting some Patron at the club, but my turn-up money, my Panther ticket money, I'm going to divest that. Instead of going that, I'm going to sit at home with my family and play Monopoly, chess, and Pinochle, and I'm going to use this funds for the Black Revolution. Let's say that happened, and we got 5, 10, 20, hell, 80% of Black folks decide to do that. Where the hell are they going to put the money? Where are the Black cooperative enterprises? Oh, but there are Black charities. But like I said, those Black charities, in fact, if you have a not-for-profit, if you work for a not-for-profit, the not-for-profit is owned and regulated by the state, hands down. There is no private or personal ownership of a not-for-profit. And I know you look at these not-for-profits and these little fiefdoms and you think, no, these are personal piggy banks. That ain't how it's supposed to be. And that ain't really how it is. Not-for-profits are owned, regulated, and controlled and can be shut down at any moment by the state. And I'm not saying there's no value in the not-for-profit arena. Like Malcolm X said, by all means necessary, for-profit, not-for-profit, above board, underground, everywhere, every which way. By the Bible, by the ballot, by the bullet or the gun, any which way, freedom must come. So, let's say we get a statistically relevant number of Black people that are going to divest and take their personal entertainment, their personal disposable income, and kick it out to the revolution. Let's say we get the entire 700 million right here. There's a pool of money that Black folks all walked in and put in a giant collection plate, $700 million. And now what? The first thing that would happen was that all the Black leaders would start beating the hell out of each other and trying to discredit each other so that they could justify taking a bigger part of the plane, the pot. How do I know this? Because there are Black entities, Black or institutions that collect $700 million from Black people and pull their little meager resources, and that's the Black church. And I have no reason to believe that the so-called conscious community would be any different if they were given access to such a pool of funds. And one thing you got to know, Dr. John Henry Clark said, if you can't manage a candy store in Harlem, then don't pretend like you're ready to run an African economy. So since I see that the conscious community ain't done nothing, if you can't do nothing with $7, you ain't going to be able to do nothing with $700 million. So even you Black people that are talking about what we could do with that money, if they showed up at your doorstep and gave you that money right now, the best you could probably do is call some accounting firm, some investment firm from Wall Street, and hopefully that they'll justly invest it and not take too much money in fees and royalties. So what I would say, as opposed to hooping and hollering about the $700 million, all this money Black people are trickling in, it's trickle-down economics, it's trickle-up. Black people run in there, and it's just they're getting, because that's serotonin. Those dopamine levels, looking at, apparently, for some Black people, seeing Black folks on the big screen doing magic and superpowers, for some reason it does something above and beyond simple entertainment for Black folks. And that in itself is an issue, but it's a different issue. I just get tired of Black people talking about and crying and hooping and howling about how much they spend on. And it ain't just, it's not just the movie, hooping and hollering about Black men lining up for Jordans or Black women lining up for Remy Reeves and how Black folks' money is just dispersed to the seven winds. And I'm telling you, the Chinese, just wherever you think money, the BRICS nation, look at the BRIC nations, Brazil, India, China, and Russia. Economic, emerging economic powers, regional economic superpowers. Not global yet, but they're getting there. That are offering a real challenge to the global, what they call the global north. Western Europe, Canada, United States, Australia. That are going to these international summits, negotiating these global trade deals, and giving the white boys a run for their money, the international bankers. The global 1%. They didn't do it with movie ticket money, Jordan money. Now, I'm going to talk about, I guess I've obligated myself to talk about what it really takes to build economic, collective economic power. And how do you mobilize or corral or herd, whatever term you want to use. You get the human resources to voluntarily or even involuntarily fall in line with an economic agenda. But simply trying to guilt them or appeal to their better natures is not how it was done. Look at the Chinese Revolution. Look at, it's not what I call the Russian restructuring, how Russia went from a centralized planned economy to a oligarchical capitalist economy under Boris Yeltsin in the 90s and the Russian oligarchs. And then after it went to a unconsolidated grab, resource grab, to a consolidated, centralized, authoritarian economic structure. More akin to China. So I think those are something black people should study. But we don't even understand. We love to talk about how we made American wealth, but we don't know anything about how wealth has been created, sustained, and passed forward through generations. There are still black people out here who really think that white people are rich because they work hard, they've been frugal, and they sacrifice for the long term. No matter how many times white people get together and collapse the global economy, I still find black people saying that. They really, black people, we buying weaves and Jordans. White people don't do that. And no matter what, even now we know with the internet, now the information has been democratized. We know white people are out here buying chocolate anuses, where they get literally, you can go somewhere and have a mold made of your anus, and then they'll turn that mold into chocolate candy, and you could send that to your lover, and they could put gold flakes in it. We know how wasteful, I'll line up for Jordans every day of the week before I did that once. But they really think that black people are poorly manage our money and white people properly manage their money, and that's it accounts for the wealth disparities between whites and blacks. Ain't got nothing to do with it. And like I said, now maybe the Great Depression and all of that might have been something we too young, we didn't live through that, and our grandparents don't like to talk about it. But now we didn't live through several what they call corrections now. They don't call them depressions. They recessions and corrections. So we've seen that it ain't. I mean, hell, they elected Donald Trump president. I mean, that should blow up forever. This whole notion that white people are a responsible and frugal race of people. That's not how they secured wealth. And I think the reason, and because we don't understand wealth, that also greatly damages the black internal class analysis. Because we love the rag to riches stories. We love to think about how Jay-Z was pushing crack cocaine in Marcy Projects. And now he's an international global media mogul. And we love these rags to riches stories. But what I think should be focused on more than how you went from the bottom, started from the bottom, now you're here. What should be more relevant to the black masses is, how do you sustain wealth? Because, you know, securing wealth could be as simple as putting your nose to the grindstone and developing a skill through formal or informal education that some multinational corporation is willing to pay you for. Wicked jump shots, crack rocks, rocking the mic. We know the various means to get wealth. But what's more important, what really is relevant to us, is not getting that paper, but how do you sustain and grow that paper once you got it? And that's where you can really define who's on our side and who, for whether they have a good heart, whether they're proud to be black, whatever their ideology is. If you want to be able to sustain certain numbers, a certain lifestyle, there's certain rules to the game. Whether you're black, Asian, Buddhist, religious, atheist, racist, kumbaya, it doesn't matter. If you want to stay in the game, you got to play according to the rules of the game, rich people understand this. The moment you get that money and you want to sustain and expand on that fiat currency, you have to know that the masses are a liability. They're your enemy. But that's another discussion. I'm going to talk, and I don't like talking this wealth building stuff, because a lot of these black people, they're trying to push us into everything from Bitcoin to other hustles and pyramid schemes. Their goals are not much different than the non-political, non-radical, non-revolutionary elites. But that's another discussion. All I'm saying is, fall back off of that, watching, you know, as absurd as Dame Dash on many things. One thing I follow, I would say we should apply Dame Dash philosophy. Just keep your mind out of Disney's pockets in that respect, on how much money they making. I think we should pay attention to how they're distributing their money, where they are investing, what holdings they currently have, and what holdings they seek to secure. I think we should study that. But that $700 million and counting, that billions of dollars that black people from their individual homes are going to just throw at this whole Panther Mania stuff, that's not our money. And that's not money that's really accessible to the rest of us. But there are pots of wealth and there are economic opportunities that we neglect because we tripping off of irrelevant numbers. And more on that to come. Maybe Friday. Because we have this obsession with numbers and fiat. So we'll talk about it. And I definitely, you don't have to take my word for it. I'm going to be talking. What I'm sharing with you about building economic power, it won't be coming from me. I mean, literally, Amos Wilson wrote the book, The Blueprint for Black Power. And I'd say 60% of that book focuses on economic development. And we ain't paying, and he ain't saying nothing about convincing the masses to take their ticket money and divert it to other enterprises. And before you can ask black folks for their fractured funds, we should already have the basic blueprint, the basic infrastructure, or basically a plan, an economic plan, which people don't have. So shut up about that. Here's something else I want to talk about, because I'm just trying to condense all of the Black Panther mania into a small show. Killmonger. And again, some people that I respect have been saying some utter nonsense. And there's been a whole bunch of jawboning about Killmonger, whether he was right or wrong. And let me tell you, Killmonger, I mean, like Dale Jones said about white folks, damn, they good. I'm speaking as one. I have seen every single one of both the Marvel and the DC movies. I haven't gone, the only one of them, Black Panther is the only one I've saw on the big screen. I've seen every single one of, every single one of the movies. I haven't missed any of them. But again, I usually see them almost a year after they first come out because I ain't about to go sit in no movie theater because I'm not going to put. Because I am one of the few black folks that say, hey, I will divest my meager funds from the global propaganda apparatus and try to find ways to spend my money or divert my funds in ways that empower my community collectively. But when the movies first started coming out, I was excited. I've been reading comic books since I was 8 years old. And one of my favorite genres, titles, was the X-Men. And because you had the mutants and the heroes. The heroes, the Fantastic Four. I even liked the Fantastic Four movies. Everybody hated on the Fantastic Four movies. I even liked Suicide Squad. Everybody, even the comic movies. The only comic movie that really didn't speak to me was Doctor Strange. I never read the Doctor Strange movie. I just wasn't the biggest fan of Doctor Strange. He was one of the few Marvel characters that I just didn't rock with. And to be honest with you, I didn't really read Fantastic Four that much. But then I always kind of kept DC at arm's length until they started doing some really wonderful things with, I've always felt that DC heroes are just too overpowered. So you couldn't really have interesting stories. I mean, with all the superpower, mega superpower. I mean, Martian Manhunter, Wonder Woman, and Superman. Why even have it? And then the Flash. I mean, they literally had like demigods. You know, they had demigods. Whereas, you know, the Marvel side of the things, their heroes, there was always kind of a catch to the power. Like Cyclops, even though he had the powerful octave blast, he was essentially blind without the rose quartz, and he had an injury in his childhood, and that the head injury greatly, you know, limited his power. Cable, who's going to be in the new Deadpool movie, he has the legacy virus, so the more he uses his immense power, the more the virus takes over and can eventually kill him. Wolverine, even though he has all those superpowers, he goes into these blind berserker rages, which makes him easily manipulable. You know, so every single hero on the DC side has some kind of really severe catch. So when they use their powers, they always had to be very mindful because there would always be a great potential for negative outcomes. Whereas Superman, the Boy Scout, you know. So, and even Batman. But then when JLA, the Justice League of America, came out, they actually started really focusing less on the powers and more. But anyway, y'all don't want to hear this. But read some of that later JLA comics, like Tower of Babel. Go read Tower of Babel, where Batman had been for years creating a means to defeat all of the other Justice League members. And then Ra's al Ghul stole those and used them against him because he felt that if any of the Justice League members went rogue, they could literally single-handedly take over the planet or kill billions of people single-handedly. And he wanted contingencies. But those contingencies fell into the hands of the enemy of the JLA, and that's when they kicked Batman out of the JLA, but before they could kick him out, he quit. So I've been following comics. Just take my word for it. I've been following comics for quite some time. And so when they started making blockbuster movies out of comic book characters, I'm like, hey, why? Hey, I ain't complaining, and I've seen them all. But there's one thing, one trend that I freaking noticed that separates Killmonger from all other villains, and it ain't just that he was black. They said he's on the level of Joker. Like, in terms of classic villains, even though it's two separate genres. Now, Marvel villains run the gambit. The very first Marvel blockbuster they said that set off the Marvel Universe was Iron Man. Who was Iron Man's enemy? Iron Monger. Iron Monger was a corrupt industrialist who worked under Tony Stark's father, and he wanted to take over the conglomerate in his own names, and he wanted to steal Tony Stark's technology and sell it to the military-industrial complex, and he basically wanted power and wealth. In the second movie, and the third movie, all of the Iron Man villains... the second movie was a little different. It was a personal vendetta. They had Whiplash was the villain, who's a relatively minor in the comic. I'm surprised they went with that. But they had Whiplash. And, you know, you killed my father. So he wanted to take out Tony Stark and vengeance for his father. So it was a personal vendetta. And then the third Iron Man movie, it was a more corporate espionage. And even the second movie, remember, Whiplash was financed by Hammer Industries. So basically, all of the Iron Man villains were all basically corporate espionage. All of them. And then Captain America, the first one, a freaking Nazi. Red Skull, a Nazi who had magical powers. And basically all the Iron Man movies was about megalomaniacs bent on global domination. Right? And then the Avengers movie was space aliens and artificial intelligence that becomes sentient and a misguided artificial intelligence directive to say the only way to protect humanity is to destroy humanity. Typical comic book stuff. And then here comes Killmonger. Killmonger had a very real objective. Black people are oppressed all over the world, and I have figured out a way to get them weapons and technology that will give the oppressed black people all over the world an opportunity, a means to fight their oppressor. Never before. When you look at all the other movies, which I've seen, and I unfortunately remember almost too intimately, that shocked myself as I started to think about this, my recall on this kind of embarrassed myself. I thought I was a bit hipper than I was. That's a pretty atypical villain. Villains, none of the other Marvel villains had a noble cause in their own minds, but it was so obvious to the audience that this is a misguided individual or a misguided mission. When the Chitauri came through the warp portal in the sky, and they were much, now that we find out with Thanos, they're part of a much larger intergalactic conspiracy of conquest. And so when they make it, it